It's time for Good Health, an opportunity to hear from our local healthcare community about the most current medical topics and how they relate to your healthy lifestyle. Good Health is brought to you by Good Shepherd Healthcare System. Now let's welcome our host, Nick Bayerano.
Welcome to Good Health, sponsored by Good Shepherd Healthcare System. I am your host, Nick Bayerano. Joining us in the studio today is Dr. Patrick Harrison, orthopedic surgeon who recently joined the Good Shepherd Medical Group here in Hermiston. If you have any questions, send us an email to kohugoodhealth@gmail.com. Again, that is kohugoodhealth@gmail.com. Welcome to the show, Dr. Harrison.
Good morning, Nick. Good morning, Hermiston and surrounding listeners. Glad to be here.
All right. So, Dr. Harrison, one thing I just wanted to ask you to get us started and to let our listeners know a little bit more about you is, where did you come from?
Well, that's a difficult question. My kids struggle with that. We've moved several times being military. So I have an active duty military background and enjoyed serving our country as a flight surgeon. And we just came from a small town in Nebraska called Kearney, Nebraska. So a lot of good farming and ranching in that area. And that's kind of what we're drawn to. We like the smaller communities, enjoy taking care of the patients, and enjoy the tight-knit communities similar to that.
So you mentioned you were in the military and are still active in the military.
I am on some reserve list. I'm not sure what I'm on
yet. Okay. So where did you go to medical school?
I trained in Kansas City, Missouri.
Okay. All right. So how long have you been practicing orthopedics?
About 10 years now, Nick.
Wow. Well, very cool. So what made you choose to become an orthopedic surgeon?
Early on, I would see patients who had difficulty with simple tasks like walking, getting up and down, and it was a revelation to me early on when I would see people have simple knee surgery like a knee replacement. Although it can be complex, the majority of patients, it would change their quality of life. And to see them be able to do the things, whether it's with their kids, grandkids, without pain, whether it's getting back on the farm or getting back out to work or back playing golf, that was a true revelation to me. And that's what encouraged me to take up that avenue.
So I know what an orthopedic surgeon is, but not all of our listeners might know that. So just to kind of describe, what does an orthopedic surgeon actually do? Because I know there's more than just surgery that you do.
There absolutely is. So if someone falls down and breaks an arm or breaks a leg, we're involved in helping take care of those fractures and simple things like strains, sports injuries like ACL injuries or basketball or football injuries. We enjoy taking care of our young youth and helping them get into programs that can prevent injuries. We do things with the elderly to help them get into low impact type strengthening programs to where they're not going to injure their joints more and they can continue to stay strong and be healthy. And so those are some of our goals, is getting people up off the couch and off the computers and all those fun gadgets and getting them outside and enjoying some healthy activities.
So essentially you're saying the more active you are, the stronger your bones and muscular system get and more it supports you, obviously, probably.
We sure like to see people get active, and for those that have joint problems, we usually steer them to therapy to help teach them a program they can follow at home or outside. However, that can be tough with these smoky days out here now.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned also that you see kids in kind of a roundabout way. Do you see kids to elderly in the practice?
Absolutely. So, and that's one thing I have specialized in, certain things like total joint arthroplasty in the past, which is replacement of things like hips and knees. However, I have always continued to see children throughout all ages, from people that are born with congenital problems all the way up to our good elderly folks.
Great. And I know as a surgeon, you probably also see traumas as well, correct?
You sure do.
Okay. So you're listening to Good Health on KOHU, and joining me today is Dr. Patrick Harrison, orthopedic surgeon who recently joined the Good Shepherd Medical Group and is practicing alongside of Jeremy Anderson in the Advanced Orthopedic and Sports Medicine Clinic If you have any questions, send us an email at kohugoodhealth@gmail.com. Again, that is kohugoodhealth@gmail.com. So I'm sure you've had a pretty thriving practice where you came from. So what made you decide to come to Hermiston?
Well, you kind of led into that. Dr. Jeremy Anderson and I went to medical school together way back in the day. And so he and I have been trying to figure out a way we can get our practices back together. I almost tried to drag him to my practice, and fortunately we didn't take him away from here, and he was able to bring me here. So he and I have had a good relationship, and there's nothing like stressing the importance of having a good partner and a good relationship out there.
So we do have a question. Can you replace both knees at one time, and is that a good or bad idea?
Well, I think that's a very common question. There are people that do both knees at the same time, and so there's no real cookie-cutter answer to that. It's based on a lot of the patient's risk, and so if you have a completely healthy patient, that's something that can be done. However, there are some risks with things like knee replacements that doing both at the same time can even double your risk. So we individualize that with each patient. There's no cookie cutter answer for that. And I think that if you look around the country, there are people that do both at the same time. However, there also are many that don't. They'll do one at a time and get them rehabbed through it. And so we individualize that with each patient and go from there.
Have you done many double knee replacements, I guess?
I will do partials or unis.
Okay.
Where we'll do partial knees at the same time. If someone wants both done, my practice, I typically will do one, and then as soon as they're rehabbed, able to lead up and down stairs with that knee, which is usually for a healthy person 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay.
Same with hip replacements. So I'll usually do one, and if someone's healthy, they'll be up and walking with a hip replacement in a week or two, at the earliest without a walker or supported device, and then we'll get the other one done.
Okay. And then the other question that we got from someone is, what is the youngest age you would suggest for a knee replacement?
Well, you know, with patients that, you know, we're coming into the baby boomer strip here with our young patients that have been very active, and hip and knee replacement is something that has been in the literature a long time where we expect knees to go up 700% with our baby boomers, and hips up 300%. And so it's becoming an issue in places where they have a 5-year waiting list for someone who needs a hip or knee replacement in places like Canada. Wow. And we're seeing a high demand of people that need hip and knee surgeries or replacement, and it's tough to get them fit in. So the youngest age, obviously, is usually brought by somebody who's had a congenital defect, someone who's had something called dysplastic hip, or even avascular necrosis. And my own brother, who's 42, needs a hip replacement.
Wow.
I've done hip and knee replacements on people in their 30s that may have had old injuries as a young high school athlete or were born with congenital conditions that needed replacement.
So kind of sticking along that same line of questioning, if somebody does have a knee or hip replacement or joint replacement early on in life, do they ever have to potentially have that redone and replaced again?
Absolutely. We would love those to last forever. And over the years, they have gotten better. We used to tell people when I was in training 15 years ago that they'd only last 10 years. And now we're saying they'll last 20 and even up to 30 years in the lab now. Although we'd like to have one surgery and have that last forever, they don't always last forever.
Well, and I guess it depends probably on how active that person is after they've had the replacement and what they do, and you know,
certainly can, Nick. And then obviously there's the risk with things like infection that we have to do surgeries for on rare occasion.
Okay. So when it comes to patient care, how do you determine the best treatment method for your patients?
Well, you know, that's a very broad question, Nick. I think that there's no cookie-cutter answer for each individual thing. I think each patient with their condition
Okay, so
can be a little different. So
if you have like a or need to do an assessment on somebody, what would that look like, and how do you do that assessment in the office?
Well, it's brought on by the patient's complaint, you know, by listening to the patient. They'll usually tell you really what's going on.
Uh-huh.
And the exam portion is just confirming usually what the patient's communicating to us. And so we'll use modalities such as x-rays and MRI, which we have right in our office, to help clarify the patient's pathology and help give us answers. And then we can formulate an assessment and plan based on that.
Okay. And I'm sure there's probably hundreds of conditions that you probably treat, but what are some of the most common that you see that come through your office?
A lot of sprains and strains. You know, people are out working, whether it's lifting a trailer, baling hay, playing sports, or weekend warriors. So that's a very common thing we see in the office. Arthritis is also another one, like we talked about with these baby boomers growing up. So I think the sports injuries with sprains and strains and arthritis are very common things that an orthopedic surgeon can help improve your quality of life and give you some treatment with.
And, you know, being a surgeon, I know some of our listeners are probably thinking that, you know, again, all you do is surgery, but there's obviously other things that you do to treat some of your patients. So what are some common non-surgical treatment methods that you use prior to surgery to see if that would work?
That's a very good question. So, you know, let's take, for example, arthritis. So if we take someone who's been weakened because they haven't been able to exercise and just take them directly to surgery, they'll often have a longer rehab. So if we take an example of a patient who may have fallen and broke their hip, one of the treatment options is to fix their hip with surgery, meaning like a hip replacement. Mm-hmm. And those patients often take long time, months and months to get better, and they'll have to be in a nursing home. If we take a patient that comes in with a similar problem with arthritis of the hip and replace their hip, and we take the time to get them strong before with home therapy or inpatient or outpatient therapy, we can often expedite their rehab to where they're up and moving within weeks instead of months. So commonly we'll teach people, along with our sports trainers and therapists, programs where they can actively get stronger themselves.
Okay.
Things like that. Obviously there's medications, things like anti-inflammatories, steroid shots, lubrication shots, and new that's been at least publicly new. We did it 15 years ago in Rensselaer. There are shots that can help try and grow cartilage, things like PRP, things of those nature that we're trying to help the body heal itself. So,
very cool. So how do you determine if somebody is ripe for an injection versus having a surgery? Is it based on some of those modalities that you talked about,
like
the x-rays and MRIs? And
it is, and I'm pretty conservative. I like to try all the conservative routes first, because oftentimes people can get better with those conservative treatment modalities, whether it's an anti-inflammatory medicine or a shot, and they're not ready for surgery. Surgery is always a last resort, and albeit some people may need surgery earlier than others, I think it's good to try those least invasive methods first with everybody before we jump right to surgery.
And our listeners probably appreciate that, hearing
sure.
that. And, you know, for some of this common surgical treatment that you use, I know for a while it was a big deal to have like an anterior hip replacement and stuff. What is the difference in an anterior versus a posterior, and in also healing? Because I know there's different healing comes quicker with one supposedly than with the other, but what is your take on that?
So when you Google that, there's going to be a lot of answers, and that's a lot of what my patients do. And the answer for someone who's seeking a hip surgery is you want to do what the surgeon is comfortable with. That's something you don't want to dictate to the surgeon that I want you to do a certain approach. I think you want to do what the surgeon's comfortable with. Most surgeons in the United States were all trained posterior. Now, within the last 10 years, we started training more to do anterior lateral or anterior approaches. And I was a firm believer in the anterior approach. Because the reason is you don't have to cut any muscles. You go between the planes of the muscles. And that makes a whole lot of sense as a surgeon. If you can go in between muscles and not have to disturb tissue and then repair it later, patients have an obviously faster recovery for that reason. So I enjoy doing the anterior approach to hips. I've done posterior, I've done anterior lateral, and I can tell you my patients that go through the front, because we disturb less muscles, have a much quicker recovery.
Wow. And that's probably something our listeners like to hear as well. And I know we've kind of just talked about it a little bit just in our own conversations, but I know that robotics are becoming kind of a big thing. Do you see that as being kind of the future of orthopedic surgery as well?
There is some good evidence that by using this computer navigation or robotics can help us place implants very precisely. You know, although I think surgeons, we like to think we're as perfectionists, we do them perfect every time. Mm-hmm. That gives us an ability to just confirm our angles, our cuts, and our precision while we're in the operating room. So I think that's an important part of it, and I think that that can help surgeons, especially low-volume surgeons that may not do hundreds of total joints a year, that can help ensure they're putting those in as perfectly as they can.
Very cool. So you're listening to Good Health on KOHU. Today we've been talking with Dr. Patrick Harrison, a new orthopedic surgeon in Hermiston. Have a question for Dr. Harrison, send us an email at kohugoodhealth@gmail.com. We've gotten a couple questions today, but if there's any more, be sure to send us an email at kohugoodhealth@gmail.com. So outside of the office routine, do you also take care of traumas, which we've talked a little bit about, but for listeners just turning in, what does a trauma look like usually for an orthopedic surgeon?
Well, a trauma can be anything from a simple slip and fall, to all the way to someone who's involved in a major motor vehicle accident. So I think that there's levels of trauma centers out there where a lot of the times the emergency medical services team makes those calls early on, whether someone needs to be flown by air or traveled by ground. And that's kind of what I did as an active duty military officer. And you're a triage person to get them to the best level of care they may need. And in trauma, there's this golden hour rule. And with orthopedics, some of those things aren't so urgent, but there obviously are things that can be more urgent. So those decisions are made usually at the emergency room level or at the EMS level of where they go based on the mechanism.
Very cool. So I know the real question our community is probably wanting to ask you is, what would they expect, or a community member, if they were to come in and see you, what would they expect from the care they would receive?
You know, I think that's a good question. And as people get to know me, and my nursing staff will say that I like to get to know my patients. Sometimes I'll get long-winded. I don't have a problem running behind in clinic if people are getting good care. I'd rather focus it on quality, getting patients' questions answered and giving good quality care, as opposed to people feeling like they're running through a machine type where we see hundreds of patients a day. I mean, we're in a small community. That's why I chose here. And we're fortunate enough to have a single hospital entity here where our community members are part of the board and part of the administration, and we're all one big family here. So, you know, I try and treat each person like it's my own family coming in, and that's what I'd hope my doctor would do, and that's what I try and deliver.
Awesome. I know that's probably comforting for our listeners. And I also understand that you live a pretty active lifestyle. What are some of the things that you enjoy doing outside of the office?
You know, the military taught me how to shoot a little bit, so I enjoy shooting. So we do a little long-range shooting. My son and I have gone out as far as 2 miles. So we like doing a little shooting. And then we love playing golf. We love fishing. We've had a chance to get out there on the river, and what a beautiful place we have here with the Columbia River. And so we enjoy being outdoors, and I think there's nothing better than trying to swipe that golf ball around and venting out any frustrations and have a little friendly competition with friends and family.
Awesome. And one other thing I want to ask you is, before we go here, if someone is currently suffering from an orthopedic condition, what would you want them to take away from our discussion today?
You know, I think that there's many different orthopedic conditions that that can occur. I think that if your wife or your loved one's been nagging you about a limp or a pain, come on in. Let's have it. We'll take a look at it and see if we can help you out.
All right, and it looks like we got another question from one of our listeners. What is the youngest you can have a hip replacement? And is it true you can only have it done once?
So no, that's not true. You know, when implants wear out, and let's say the average person wears out at 20 years, you replace those parts that have worn out. So the mechanics of a hip replacement is it's a ball and socket. And so there's a metal cup, there's a metal stem, and there's usually a ball that's made of either metal or ceramic. And then that articulates with a plastic, a highly cross-linked plastic or polyethylene. And if that polyethylene wears out, we would just change the plastic. So it is true that if someone had a hip replacement, and like I said, I've done them in the 30s for people who had injuries as a real young teenager or were born with the condition, I've done hip replacements with someone as young as 30. Although we don't like that, obviously, we're going to push those non-surgical treatment modalities as long as they can take it. And really, the patient's the one who determines when it's time for surgery. When you can't do your normal activities of daily living and your life's really not doing well because of those, the last resort is surgery. It's time to get it done.
And that brings up another question in my mind. So if, you know, you can do hip replacements, some people in their 30s, is there an age that someone would reach that might need a revision or another hip replacement that you would say, you know, you're a little old and we probably don't want to take the risk to do that?
You're right. I've had that conversation many times, and usually I bring the family members in, and you know, it's usually not an age driven factor. It's usually a comorbidity. So as we age, our heart and lungs may not be so healthy, and the last thing we want to do is try and make someone's hip better and put them 6 feet under because they have a bad heart and lung and couldn't make it through the surgery. So those are part of the pre-op testing, you know, in conjunction with their cardiologist or primary care physician, is try and do some risk factor analysis. And oftentimes we'll find there's conditions out there that need to be fixed before we take them under for a hip or knee replacement. Things like heart disease, lung disease. So those are things that, or diabetes. So if we can keep those other medical conditions optimized, we can minimize any potential problems afterwards, such as wound healing or heart attacks, things like that.
And that's absolutely what we want to do. We want to make sure that you're providing the best, safest care possible for your patients.
You're right. And the patients understand that it may take months to get them ready. It's not something that that we want to rush people that are weak, that are fall risks. Just because we replace their hip, they're not going to be instantly strong. It can take them months to get strong. So that's oftentimes we'll send them into the therapist to develop a home exercise program to get strong as they can before surgery to prevent falls after surgery.
Awesome. Well, Dr. Harrison, I want to thank you for joining me on Good Health Today. Dr. Harrison is a new orthopedic surgeon in Hermiston, and he is now welcoming new patients, and his office can be reached at 541-289-7075. Again, that is 541-289-7075. Thanks, Dr. Harrison, for being on the show.
Thank you, Nick, and thank you, Hermiston.
Let's go inside the mind of a 10-year-old.
I should have worn earrings today.
Buckle up, Sarah.